That brings us to slide 14. And in this slide, we're seeing one of the different ways in which DNA can be damaged or changed or mutated. And, well, actually two ways. But in A, we're looking at depurination, which means the removal of a purine, right? There are two kinds of bases, right? Purines, pyrimidines. Which ones are the purines? What are the names of the purines? Adenine and guanine, right. So depurination means removal of that entire nitrogenous base, that purine. And so what's left is just the ribose and the phosphate. We call that an apurinic nucleotide because it's missing the purine. And that's, of course, an error, right? Part of the error-checking mechanism that cells have to fix errors as they happen is that it will put a purine back on if it's been depurinated. But usually it adds an adenine, even if it was guanine that was removed originally. And so this is a way in which mutation results in the wrong base being in that position all of a sudden. A guanine can be lost, and then an adenine can be put back in its place. And therefore, when that... therefore you have an A instead of a G, right? That's an example of a mutation. So that's just one way. Deamination is a little bit different. What does the amin part of deamination mean? What does amine, amino, amin always refer to? Nitrogen, right. So yes, the amino group is called that because it has nitrogen, right? And there are amino groups on different nitrogenous bases. Deamination doesn't mean removal of the entire base. It means removal of the amino group sticking off of that base. And so in this example, you see that cytosine is undergoing deamination. This amino group is being removed. And that actually converts cytosine into the very similar uracil, which is, you already know uracil, but uracil is not supposed to be in DNA, right? It's an RNA nitrogenous base. So that's also an error. Well, if we go to slide 15, we can see uracil again. And you already know that uracil is the normal base used in RNA. On the other hand, in DNA, instead of uracil, thymine is used, right? And maybe you've asked yourself why in the past. Why not just use the same four nitrogenous bases in both RNA and DNA? Well, it's because of this deamination. Let me just temporarily go back to 14 and show you the example again. If cytosine undergoes deamination, it forms uracil. All right, now think about what would happen if DNA used uracil instead. Well, if you have, so you would have the uracil, cytosine, adenine, and guanine in DNA, right? So you'd have cytosine and you'd have uracil. They both would be there, right? But they would be different from each other. If cytosine underwent deamination, it would turn it into uracil. Well, uracil is one of the allowable ones in this pretend scenario, right? So if that happened, the cell wouldn't be able to know whether it accidentally was cytosine turning into uracil or whether uracil belonged there to begin with. And therefore, it wouldn't know what to do error checking wise. On the other hand, if cytosine gets turned into uracil, or in other words, if uracil is present, the cell says, that was supposed to be a cytosine. Therefore, Using thymine instead of uracil means if uracil is there, we recognize that as an error. Okay, 16. Another way to mutate is with radiation. What do we call things in general, by the way, that can cause mutations? Mutagens, right. Mutagens can be chemicals, they can be radiation. Anything that causes a mutation is a mutagen. And ultraviolet radiation is one that's causing mutations in your body all the time, especially here. If you consider a DNA sequence, you know, that sequence can be anything, right? Made up of those A's, T's, C's, and G's. So definitely within the sequence, there's going to be plenty of instances in which a T is right next to another T. And when, well, no matter what, whether they're T's or not, within the same strand, the bases are just hanging off of the sugar phosphate backbone, right? The bases have no part in holding the strand together, and they aren't attached to each other at all. I mean, that's why they don't have a part in holding the strand together. Adjacent nitrogenous bases within a strand are not bonded normally. They only hydrogen bond to the nitrogenous bases at the same position in the other strand. But if you have two T's that are adjacent within the same strand, ultraviolet radiation can easily cause what is called a thymine-thymine dimer, or just a thymine dimer, between these two adjacent thymines. What is a dimer? A two-part thing, right? Mer means part, like in polymer. Dimer is just a two-parter. So this bond between these adjacent thymines interferes with the ability for those thymines to form hydrogen bonding with the other strand. And so that's a defect in the DNA. It's not a defect because the code is wrong. The thymines are still there, but they're now interacting with each other when they shouldn't. And so this is another thing that gets solved, recognized, and undone by the error checking mechanism, but only up to a point. And these things accumulate in your body all the time, which is why you shouldn't go out and irradiate yourself just for its own sake. Try to minimize it. 17 now. Well, this is another part of error checking that we have. And it's because of all these mechanisms of error checking that the end result is that there are so few errors in your DNA. But despite all these error checking, you're accumulating thousands of mutations every day in your body. That sounds like a lot, but consider how many trillions of nucleotides you have. Just a single cell has billions of nucleotides. And you have how many cells in your body? All of them is the correct answer. It's roughly 10 trillion. Those are your own cells. You have 10 times that number of bacteria. But, some number of tens of trillions times billions is how many nucleotides you have. So thousands is not a high percentage. Still, though, it accumulates throughout your lifetime. One of the reasons why you age. But in 17, we can see the action of a repair endonuclease. And so we've talked about the difference between endonucleases and exonucleases. Here is an endonuclease because it's going to cut out a section of nucleotides somewhere in the middle of a strand of DNA. So this is damage that was done to one of the two strands. The cell basically recognizes that there's a mismatch in this place. There's some damage that's done, like a thymine-thymine dimer, for instance. Those get recognized. It causes a little kink in that one strand. That's not the only thing these endonucleases are. They're not only for thymine-thymine dimers, but that's a common example. Anyway, whatever the damage is, that needs to be cut out. And the word for cutting out is excise. Excision means to cut out. That's what the endonuclease does. It breaks what kind of bonds to do this? Not hydrogen bonds. But what kind of covalent bonds? Phosphodiester bonds, exactly. The bonds that hold the sugar phosphate backbone together within a strand. Two of those need to be broken, right? One on either end of whatever the damaged area is. Those nucleotides get removed. Well, that leaves a little gap, of course. Now, that information is gone from that strand, but that's not a big deal, right? Because of complementarity. Since you have strict complementarity, all you have to do is look at the corresponding place on the other strand to figure out what the nucleotides need to be or should have been originally there. And in other words, you do the same thing you would do for normal replication. You look at the other strand as a template, and then you fill in the missing area that's been excised by using strict complementarity rules. So that's going to involve exactly the same kind of enzymes that you use originally for replication, DNA polymerase, right? That will allow the correct nucleotide sequence to be laid down, but that can't finish the job for the same reason it's not the only player in the normal replication game, right? It will fill in the gaps, but it can't make that final phosphodiester bridge. So you're going to have still a little gap. You're going to have two pieces of DNA that need to be sewn together. And the same exact enzyme that does that job for all the Okazaki fragments in replication does the job here, DNA ligase. Once ligase makes that final phosphodiester bond, then you have a continuous strand and you can't tell that it was ever damaged. Oh, we're done with that chapter. Kind of scared me.